Welcome to the Women in Diplomacy podcast. I'm your host, Kelsey Sumnick. I'm here with Dawn Schreppel. She is one of the deputy directors of the private office at NATO. Hi, Dawn.
Hi. Welcome. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you so much for joining us. So tell us about your work at NATO. Mm-hmm. What is the private office?
Well, we'll start at the beginning. So the private office is actually the office of the Secretary General of NATO. So he is from Norway. His name is Jens Stoltenberg, and he's the former prime minister there. And he has been secretary general for a little over 2.5 years now. And he has a team surrounding him that is made up of a small core group from Norway that are his immediate personal staff, and then a whole group of us from allied nations that make up the outer private office. And so we are the hub for everything that happens here at NATO in terms of comings and goings of all paper and process and bureaucracy, but also helping set the agenda, set the schedule of North Atlantic Council meetings, setting the schedule of ministerials and summits, and helping drive the agenda of the alliance to a way that makes 28 nations happy as much as we can.
My next question was going to be, what is the biggest challenge of your job? Is it trying to please all 28?
Well, I have to say it is challenging. Working in a consensus-based organization is often very, very challenging. But it's also nice because you come from the beginning of the conversation always starts from a place of positivity because you're naturally allies. So your values are the same. Your interests are 99% of the time very much the same. And we have a shared history together over many, many decades. And so that makes it easier as a starting point to then move forward on some of our more contentious issues.
What's your favorite part of your job?
Ooh, the favorite part of my job. Well, there's some cool stuff that we get to do, obviously, with the Secretary General. We get to travel with him. We get to sit in all of his meetings, particularly bilateral meetings with heads of state. So obviously, when I have the opportunity to sit in with the head of state of one of our allied nations, that's pretty exciting. And often when you hear the Secretary General use words that you wrote, you can't help but be proud that you're actually contributing to the agenda and the work of the alliance.
Absolutely. So can you walk us through how you got here? What has your career path been?
So it's a bit circuitous, actually. I've been in public service probably in and out now almost 20 years, which is hard to believe at this point. But I started actually in Washington, and I worked on Capitol Hill with the U.S. Congress. And then I came into the U.S. administration in the mid-90s working under the Clinton administration. And that would be Bill Clinton in a day where we now might have a Hillary Clinton administration.
Indeed.
So I was, I guess, at our Department of Energy for a number of years and worked on energy policy, particularly in the international realm. Then I went and got an MBA, which I highly recommend for people, even in public policy, in a day where people are trending to get more public policy master's degrees or legal degrees. I think that my MBA has actually been incredibly beneficial because I think I analyze things in a different way than people that have had those other master's or PhD experiences. So with that, I went out into the private sector for a few years, and I could feel the longing to come back to public service. And so I took the Foreign Service exam with U.S. Department of State and became a diplomat. So I've now been a diplomat just about 12 years. And one of the opportunities that we have as Foreign Service officers is to actually be seconded to other organizations. We sort of shed our national allegiance and loyalty and become allied with another organization. So in this case, I work for NATO, and my loyalties lie with the Secretary General and the alliance as a whole rather than the United States.
I'm American as well, mm-hmm. And I'm curious how that feels. Is it a challenge to shed your national identity and kind of devote your career to an international entity? But do you think that's a relevant question?
I think so, because I think for many people who want to come and work at an international organization, whether it's the United Nations, the OSCE or, International Energy Agency, any of these places where you have to shed a little bit of your own nationality to go work for the greater good, I think is a very difficult challenge for people because it's Ooh. One of the questions they asked me in my interview for this job. Was can you do both? Can you still be an American, obviously, in your day-to-day life, and you're still an American passport holder and have those values and interests and things that you've been working on so dearly, but can you now represent that in a different way within the alliance? And it's sometimes difficult because there are times when you know your national capital is doing something mm-hmm. that may or may not be what the Secretary General would like to see be done. And so you have to navigate that. But I also feel like it makes my role that much more important to try to help navigate in a way that's successful for both sides and have that same push and pull mm-hmm. every day of trying to manage both relationships and loyalties.
Mm-hmm. How did you know that working in diplomacy or working in all of the different roles that you've taken on, how did you know that that would be a good fit for you, for your personality, for mm-hmm. your life?
Well, it's an interesting thought because I feel like I grew up as a military brat. I can say that in a fond way. So I traveled a lot and I was exposed to a lot as a kid. And I think all of that experience really helped me be an better advocate and more empathetic to other people's views and thinking. And I always found myself not wanting to take too hard of stance on any particular issue until I fully understood the other side. And I think that's an element that I feel like still is a very powerful tool for me today in negotiations, in conversations in a multilateral environment, or when we're talking to people where, you know, in Afghanistan, where we have an operation, we've been working for them for years and years and years. When I was based in Kabul, I felt like that was the most valuable thing I could do, was to help put myself in their shoes and represent their interests as we were trying to go forward.
Do you feel that diversity is an important aspect in your work? Mm-hmm. And in particular, do you have any stories of, mm-hmm. you know, imagining mm-hmm. you just mentioned Kabul, working in Afghanistan, mm-hmm. working in many different settings. Mm-hmm. Has there been cases where diversity is a strength, or also cases where diversity is hard to fight for?
Yes, all of the above. And I think for diplomats and those working in foreign affairs during this recent generation, say the last 10 or 15 years, diversity has been something that I think awareness has been rising. And I think people understand the value and the importance of emphasizing diversity in everything that we do. I think before, people just went about their business and there were so many other priorities, they weren't placing an emphasis on diversity and really taking advantage of the people and the resources that they have available to them. But I will say NATO made the case for diversity even more first and foremost in my mind, because when I first arrived here, I was really struck by the lack of diversity. And many of the female ambassadors that I've talked to, which there are not very many here at the Alliance yet, getting more and more every year, but have said that, you know, many would argue that hardcore political military work is not something that women have been drawn to. And I was really surprised by their argument, and they would actually disagree. They would say that it's just that this is, you know, over time, more and more women are coming up through the system that have political military credentials, and it's just taking some time for them to reach the higher ranks. But I do think it's something that we should continue to place a lot of importance on, because every day there are meetings that I'm in that I'm the only woman. And sometimes it's 30 or 40 men in the room and one woman. And that's in today's NATO, which is much more diverse than it was 20 or 30 years ago.
Yes.
So we definitely have work to be done.
Is there a topic in international relations that you feel needs some extra help right now, especially for those graduate students or those MBAs out there that may be looking for a research topic to tackle?
Well, this one may surprise you, and it gets into a little bit of Cold War history, actually. I was thinking about this. So one of the interesting things that I think has not gotten as much attention in recent years, and particularly since the Cold War ended, was our nuclear policy and our disarmament and armament control policy. And it comes a little bit to mind because we've got a new Deputy Secretary General here at NATO that focuses on this work. But it's also the generation that really worked on these issues hardcore and has continued to work on them for decades is aging. And we need new people to come in behind them to carry on that expertise. Because this work is, it's lifetime commitment of work in a lot of cases. Many of these treaties take 6, 8, 10, 15 years to negotiate. They're very technical. It's very, very important work. The nuclear weapons are not going away, particularly from some of our nations in the world that we may not feel as comfortable as we would like to be with having those weapons. And I think it will continue to be a conversation that has to be had. And we need people that really dedicate their life to this type of work, because without them, there will be gaps in the future on you know, those that can actually carry through this expertise. So it's a big policy question. It's certainly a big theological question when you talk about, you know, populations that would like to ban nuclear weapons. And I think we all agree how important and critical of an issue it is, but we do need more people to study it as a policy and technical issue.
Our closing question.
Yes.
What is your advice to young women who are interested in pursuing a similar career path?
Mm-hmm. What I would say, a few sort of things that I think are important to do no matter what you choose to do with your career. One, read a lot. Read as much as you can, because I think that helps you get just digest and put in as much information as you can be thinking and analyzing on all these important issues. Travel as much as you can. I think travel exposes you to things that you wouldn't see in any other way. It exposes you to the good and the bad of the world, and it does help you, you know, circling back to that empathy question, understand the perspectives and lifestyles and challenges of others in the world, which I think is really important, particularly if you're going to be in the foreign affairs world. I would say write a lot, because none of us can do without an awful lot of writing, particularly in this world. I think that, you know, a huge portion of my day is spent writing memos and briefs and issue papers, and also then trying to take really complicated strategic ideas and put them on paper and figure out how we can address them. So writing is incredibly important. And most importantly, save some room for yourself to really stop and think and contemplate, because that helps you then take all this knowledge and things that you're putting into your mind and contemplate, really figure out what interests you most, what's your passion, the things that really drive you and will get you up to work every day and you know, want you to help make major changes in the world, whatever issue it is. I don't know. It's always hard to know exactly what drives them or what moves them forward. But I do think, mm-hmm. you know, not letting anything stop you and really being open to absolutely everything is a really important driver, particularly in this line of work.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Why is that?
Well, I think because on any given day, we're exposed to so much. And in my career, I've worked on almost every part of the world. Worked on issues in the Horn of Africa. I've worked on China, worked on Cuba. You know, I've worked on Haiti, Timor-Leste in Asia. And so the more experience you have going in, it makes it easier to just drop into a new issue and be able to address it. But I've also worked on political issues and econ issues. And then all of us have to do our work on consular issues. So I've issued passports and visited Americans in jail. So you really need to be able to just sort of deal with whatever is thrown at you, and being able to do all of these things or, you know, build those skills makes it easier for you to handle it as it comes, but also to really excel and succeed at it.
Do you think we need more women in diplomacy?
Absolutely. I do think that there's, having worked for a number of senior women in the U.S. system, there is a different style often that they bring to and an approach that they bring to foreign policy challenges, whether that's challenges of peace or challenges of war. I do think that there are traits about women and how they process information and analyze work and how they manage people that can be very beneficial. And it's not to the detriment of men. They're just different, and in certain circumstances actually add value in a very different way. One plea that I make, any chance I get to talk to the public, whether it's students or kids or even adults, is somewhere in your life you should include room for public service. And it may not be your profession. You may decide that you don't want to do that full time, and there may be a whole host of reasons why not. But do it on a small scale. Volunteer, be in at a locally elected official, you know, get involved in the school board. Really find a way where you're giving back to your community, either in a global perspective or in a local perspective, because I think that really enriches one's life, but it also then it makes you much more committed to what's actually happening in the world. Small scale or big scale, public service, I think, is a really valuable thing to do.
Thanks for listening to the Women in Diplomacy podcast. The theme song for this podcast is called Misty Moses, and it's by the artists Rodrigo y Gabriela. Use of that recording is graciously provided by Rubyworks Records in Dublin, Ireland. For more information and to download more music by Rodrigo y Gabriela, check out theforeignpolicyproject.org.